You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wham Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
What is good? Welcome to this episode of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. We are sitting, or I am sitting, I should say, with Stin and Luther of the Oklahoma bass sludge weird metal band Chat Pile. Welcome to the show, boys. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. I know I just kind of gave you the overhaul of like the podcast and what it's about, but
yeah.
It's loosely based on music. But let's dive into some music talk right away, because you guys are relatively newer band. You know, in the last couple of years, you kind of jumped on the scene with Chat Pile out there in Oklahoma. So, you know, it's a very unique kind of style and a very unique, you know, sound. So I just wanted to kind of dive into where that came from and how you guys came together as a group, because you only have like a handful of years underneath your belt.
Yeah. So the way we got together as a band is we've all been friends for a long time. Like our drummer, Captain Ron, is actually my brother. So I've known him since, you know, I've been alive, basically. And then our vocalist, Reagan Bush, I mean, we've been really close friends for 20 plus years at this point. And then I've known Luther for, I mean, going on, it's been getting
years.
Yeah, at this point.
Yeah, so, we went through my cousin, the two of us, and that kind of, we started playing, it was like board game night, and then we have a love for lots of, for bad movies and stuff, and it kind of morphed into a bad movie night, because it's easier to hop in and out of that than a board game night, right. You know, it's, when especially, you know, it's an easier commitment, and yeah, we just kind of, neither of us had played in bands for a while. Stin, you can talk about found footage a little bit, but we, you know, he was in a previous band, and I'd been in some bands, and both just kind of taken time off from music. It had been a few years for me since I wasn't even really playing guitar at home, really, even at all, just even doing anything. And then, I don't know, we just kind of had the idea to jam, because we liked a lot of the same stuff, and, you know, kind of had linked up that way, and tried it out. And I always think it's funny that one of the first bassline things that, I mean, literally the first thing we ever jammed was one of our more popular songs is called Dallas Beltway. Mm-hmm. And like the kind of the verse riff bassline, Stin just had that, and I played like a completely different guitar part over it, but we were like, you know what, this sounds pretty fucking cool, we could probably start a band maybe. And then that was literally it. Like, it was very low stakes. Like, it was kind of just let's hang out.
In fact, one of the reasons we like kind of rushed to put an EP out is because we're like, we're just going to play some local shows. So we need like a recording that we can, you know, give to people to let us like tag on to whatever local
stuff. Yeah. We didn't spend a lot of time on those first two EPs. I mean, they're both written at the same time. They came out a few months apart in like May and November of 2019. But those songs were all written at the same time and really, really fast, just because, I mean, yeah, we just wanted to write some stuff and play some shows, just because it seemed like something fun to do since we, you know, hadn't been in bands.
Well, the other
a while.
Part of it too is that, like, so, you know, like, we're kind of like men on our own islands in terms of our music taste amongst all our friend groups and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Peter and I are like definitely the metal guys, and yeah. So, and that's kind of like how
we bonded over that. Yeah,
yeah, exactly, and that's why we wanted to start playing music, because we're just like, man. You know, we've been playing in bands off and on for years, but we don't get to like indulge our like metal stuff because nobody.
Yeah.
So we're like, well, I guess we need to start a band.
So yeah, pretty like, much. Cause...
So is this like your first attempt at like something sounding like what Chat Pile sounds in the metal realm? Or is it just something that you kind of, you know, started messing with and then like, this is the sound? Or is it intuitive of like Oklahoma City's current you know, scene too. I mean, who knows? I'm not out there.
So. Definitely, absolutely no on that side.
I had to ask.
The music scene is
maybe there's a movement or something.
Yeah, the scene's cool here right now, but it is a lot of like hardcore and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. there's a strong like shoegaze scene here right now.
Go figure, guys.
Yeah. This is a lot of it, but
when we first started the band, though, I would say like the flavor of everything here was like maximum rock and roll style, like, you know, DIY punk hardcore kind of stuff. So yeah,
okay.
And then like the band I was in before Chappile kind of had like leanings of some of the stuff we do, because it's like I was also on bass and then we had the same drummer, and so it's very much like kind of noise rocky rhythm based type music, but it definitely doesn't go as like hard as Chappile does or tries.
Guitar and vocals are way different in that as well. It's kind of more like Failure adjacent, which I like.
My question was, is this like your, you know, well, I guess it was based on this thought, was, is this your first like dabble into this as something as this heavy, whereas you guys might have been in bands prior, but it may have been more rock oriented, you know, where with that main Midwestern sound that is so prevalent kind of in the, you know, in your area.
Oh, for sure. And there is a band actually from here called Train Dodge that's like been around since the 90s that definitely have that like Midwest kind of like, I don't even know what to call, like, noise rock isn't the right word, but you know, that kind of like really rhythm driving indie rock kind of sound that's very Midwestern, you know.
Yeah,
but they're like the only band around here that's like that. For the most part, things seem to kind of like pick a side of the fence, you know, at least in terms of like underground DIY type music. And then, like, as far as like, the music we've made, it's like not for lack of wanting to be in heavy bands. It's just there's not really a ton of people around to grab
people through. Yeah,
yeah.
I played in like a mathcore band. I lived in Buffalo, New York, for a while, and I did some stuff like that out there. And that's always kind of the stuff I wanted to play. Like, I like Botch a lot, and like I kind of wanted to play stuff like that or stuff like Cursed. Just really kind of noisier, but still rhythm forward, like hardcore stuff. But then, when I moved back here, I just couldn't really find anyone to play with, and especially drummers. Drummers are just really hard to find, and I could find, you know, other people to maybe play guitar with and stuff. But I don't know, because I could just never find like people that are like a rhythm section to play with, or people that are compatible writing with me, at least in Oklahoma City. So. Yeah, this is the first thing like this that I've really tried in Oklahoma City. I mean, it's a lot of riffs that we've all had over the years, too. I know that this, like, especially some of those first EPs were stuff that, you know, both of us had for a long time and previous things. Like, oh, this, I wanted to, you know, make a song like this in this other band and it never got recorded. And, you know, we'll use that riff here. And so that's, you know, that stuff gets mined, but, you know, definitely the first try at, hey, let's do like a Jesus meets Corn type thing. I've never really, you know, actualized that before until like we were kind of talking about what we like.
I'd love to be in like a death metal band or something, but I'm just not that good. Yeah.
Same.
That was my next kind of two questions were like, well, how did the planets align finally after all these years for you guys to find the right culmination of people, even though it's just, there's only four of you, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, like, and you guys are like half what, you know, half of what you need in a band. You technically only need three people if you can find a vocalist out of three of you guys.
Yeah. But,
you know, the planets somehow aligned where there's four of you guys out there in Oklahoma. Finally, you guys, you know, all find each other. But where did you guys kind of find that signature sound that you guys have? You just mentioned like Korn and a couple of like Jesus Lizard, and like, yeah, those are like clearly in the mix, but you know, when I also hear it, I also hear other kind of like early hardcore band like Converge and stuff like that, and like, you know, a little bit of that in the fold too. So, you know, what I guess we'll break into two parts, like, how did the planets align first?
Well, you're kind of hitting on like a big part is that it does have all that stuff in it, and it's just because we all have such eclectic taste, you know. It's like none of us going into this ever we're like, oh, we're going to be this type of band, we're going to be a hardcore band or a death metal band or a noise rock band or whatever. It's just kind of like, let's just kind of feel it out and see what works for us, and like really lean into all the different elements of these music that we like, that and maybe try to make something kind of new out of it, you know. Like, we sort of stole the drum tone from Godflesh, you know. The the kind of thematic stuff is sort of borrowed from like the noise rock world of like, you know, Big Black and Jesus mm-hmm. Lizard and that kind of thing. And then, yeah, there's kind of some bouncy corn riffs and all that kind, you know, and then, yeah, there's all the
tuning too. Cause I know that we definitely were just like, no matter what we did, I wanted to play in a really low tuning. Cause I mean, that was kind of like even more, it wasn't just necessarily like mentioning bands, but it's like, I knew we were just like, we want to play something super low, but also what if we did kind of like a noise rocky thing, but it is in that lower kind of metal tuning as well. That was more just kind of the initial thought. And then I just play sloppy and play all my strings at once. So, and just kind of let Sten do be very like bass forward. So I don't know. It just kind of like that sound just kind of came naturally just from the way that both of us play. Like he plays very riffy actually on bass. And then I like to be, you know, kind of sloppy and stuff. So it just kind of, I don't know, it kind of works for it.
I pretty much exclusively play riffy, which is like to the detriment of anyone who's had to play guitar, like alongside me, because you know, it's hard. Like I'm not really following the guitar ever. It's almost always the other.
And I don't like riffs. So I just want to play fucking, you know, like just all my strings at the same time. So
Yeah. Hey, what's up? It's Lurk. Looks like you're enjoying the podcast. If you are and you like what we're doing here on The Van Flip, why don't you go ahead and pause this, give us a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to. If you want to find out any information on your favorite bands from the hardcore and metal scene, visit lambgoat.com. And to stay in the loop about everything that we post on lambgoat.com, make sure you like us on Facebook and you head over to Twitter and Instagram and follow us at lambgoat. Are you a full-grown adult and you also have a TikTok account? Congrats. Follow us on TikTok as well. You can find us under the username lambgoat.com. That's spelled out D-O-T-C-O-M. Head over to our YouTube channel where we have all of these podcasts in video format, plus a lot more content that you should check out. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and you hit that notification bell so you're always alerted when we upload new content. And last but not least, if you want to follow me, Lurk, the host of the show, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at LurkCity. And as always, if you need any of the links that pertain to the artists on the show today, Lambgoat, or myself, you can always find them in the description. Thanks for listening to this message. Now let's get back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, going back to like kind of the beginning of the question there, it's like it's not so much that we had any particular idea in mind. We just kind of found the sound, you know? And I think it's kind of weird. Like, I could never imagine like forming a band and being like, we're going to sound exactly like this. We're going to sound exactly like Bolt Thrower or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't imagine like, hyper-focusing or even wanting to waste your time doing that. It's like, why not just kind of like create something new, you know? And then as far as like the confluence of events, like I mentioned earlier, where, you know, we've all been friends forever. So it's really just kind of like lightning in a bottle, just like luck. That said, Reagan, our singer, I mean, he's done like kind of more like indie singer-songwritery, experimental, lo-fi type stuff for 20 years. And we, you know, not only is he a buddy of ours, but we know that he has a very unique vocal style that we thought would translate really well to the type of weird stuff we were doing. And he was game, you know, and like, it's been a long running joke with me and Ray Gun for like years where we wanted to start some type of like fake Big Black type band, you know, because we would make up fake lyrics for that kind of thing all the time. We're like, well, I guess we can do this in real life now, finally.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to bring Reagan up, but he's obviously not here, so I don't necessarily know how in depth we can get with like maybe, you know, the answers you guys provide. But you brought up his vocal style, and clearly when you listen to the record or any of you guys' material, you can clearly you know, he stands out very, very much. Do you guys know where that came from, or is that something that he's like purposely doing with this particular outfit? Because like you said, he's done some other projects and other kind of genres before, so.
No, that's kind of his
style. That's him. I mean, the lyrics and stuff, obviously he's writing like characters and it's not necessarily autobiographical and stuff. Like sometimes people try to get a little too autobiographical. Like they think it's more autobiographical than it is, but it's like, you know, it's we're making, you know, some, there can be some of that in there, but it's like, you know, it's like horror movie type stuff, you know?
Got you.
But I don't know. He, beyond that though, I mean that's who he is, you know. He is from Ponca City, Oklahoma. He's not putting on an accent or anything, you know, like that's, yeah.
And it's what's crazy too, Luther, I don't know if you've ever, like, if this happens to you now, but like being so ingrained in the music, when I'm just hanging out with him and he starts talking, I'm like, oh, it's like It's like I'm listening to the chat pile.
I have not had that. No, I'm not disassociating that hard yet. Maybe in other ways.
Yeah, that's definitely him. Now, like, you know, his older material, you know, like I said, has more of like an indie kind of vibe to it. But like, he still applies that kind of like unorthodox vocal style to that type of music. And I would highly recommend, like,
yeah, Randy Rules on Bandcamp. RandyRulz.bandcamp.com is his.
That's some of the more recent stuff. Like, if you look at the stuff like from like when he's in his early 20s and stuff, it's just as crazy and like definitely worth people hunting down. And it's all out there too if you like dig deep enough to listen to it. But it's going to be different than Chat Pile. Like, there's definitely not like a metal band behind him or anything. It's more eclectic than that. So,
yeah, you guys touched a little bit on the DIY nature of, like, you know, just what you guys are into and obviously the band. A lot of your stuff, whether it's video or content, is pretty DIY as well, even including some of the videos you guys made for your full-length debut, God's Country. Do you guys want to continue that going forward as the band grows? Because you guys are growing at, you know, a somewhat fast rate. You guys are doing festivals and stuff and playing more shows, getting more offers here and there. So, like, you may not have time to do as much DIY, but... What do you feel on that keeping the mainstay of the band, or keeping that as a mainstay of the band?
To me, it's like a decisive aesthetic choice that fits along with kind of the sort of artistic mission of the band. You know, I think if we ever started doing stuff that looked really slick, it just wouldn't work. Or let me walk that back. It's not like I'm opposed to ever doing anything like that. It would just, we'd have to actually kind of pivot what we're trying to accomplish musically and as a project in my mind.
Like, even with the videos though, I mean, because we don't make the videos in the band. Like, we, you know, we've just found people, usually locally, like friends in Oklahoma, or people have reached out to us to make videos. Like, more of the DIY stuff for us is like, you know, we record all of our own music and Austin mixes it, and it's more like that type of stuff, because like the videos are cool. And I like, shout outs to Will Mecca, who just did a recent video for us for a song Cut that's on a split that's coming out with Nerver, and that definitely captured our aesthetic a lot. And I mean, those people are doing it in like a DIY way, but yeah, we're not filming those ourselves though, you know. But
I mean, they're all people that are in like
the
broader DIY scene.
Yeah. Like, yeah, for us, it's like definitely a thing that I want to keep doing is recording our own stuff. I think that has definitely been a strong suit for us. It's allowed us to at least work the way we want to work too, just because we don't have to really, be beholden to studio time or the money that studio time entails. Or any of that kind of stuff. So it was more just that, like, when we were starting the band, we weren't like wanting to spend money on a studio, because who gives a shit about our band? So why not just record it with like free Reaper on a 10-year-old iMac? Because why would we ever spend money on this? Yeah. You know?
So that has, I'm going to ask about maybe where some of the secret sauce comes from. Because you guys are doing your own stuff in-house, is there something that you kind of stumbled upon that is kind of like, and again, you don't have to give me the full details on any of this, but is there anything that you've kind of stumbled upon doing it yourself within these free, you know, plugins or anything like that, that maybe has lent itself to being a big, not influence, but a big reason to the Chat Pile sounds a certain way as to like why it sounds like that?
I could go on forever about that.
That's mainly you, because you are effectively our sound engineer for the band. Yeah.
So here's the thing: I also do not mind giving away the secret sauce, because I would love for more bands to run away with the concept. Not to put any like engineers out of business or anything. There's still definitely a need for that.
And plenty of people, have problems with our production as well.
It's not for everybody, definitely. But here are like a few things that I've learned. First off, I'm completely untrained, and I'm sure any like real engineer who listens to our records can hear that in spades, and it drives them crazy. But the real trick is that we use an e-kit to record the drums, which cuts out the need for about 10 microphones and a lot of know-how. So we have a lot, like, a you know, Ron drums live. In fact, what you're hearing is us, all the three of us playing at the same time. Like, those takes are live takes. There's no...
Yeah, we play it all the way through, yeah, at least once. So there's at least a guitar, bass, and drum track that is a single take with no cuts mm-hmm. at all on every single song we've ever done. And then I do guitar overdubs, and then vocal overdubs happen. But yeah, so it's very tedious to write like that. I like writing like that, but it's just, we definitely play a song like 5,000 times to try and like get the perfect bass take, you know, to put the rest of the stuff on. But yeah, the e-kit makes it kind of easier because we can play all, we don't have, you know, we have bleed, but since that's just going through MIDI into our interface, it's like it has that drum machine sound, but it's, since it's obviously played in real time, and then we don't quantize it after the fact either. It's just, we just let it be how it was played. Like, it just kind of, it's a sloppy drum machine sound because it's a real person playing it, but it definitely has helped not have a billion mics and have to isolate. We can all be in the same room at the same time and stuff, so
it's a small room at that. And yeah, we don't use a click. And then you know, what's cool also with the e-kit is you can take those samples and you can manipulate those. So that's, like I mentioned earlier, like trying to get that kind of industrial godfleshy sound, like we purposely manipulate the drum samples to sound kind of fake so that you get that cold kind of tone to them, you know. And then what I would say as far as like plugins and all that stuff goes, I use barely anything. Just the most simple compression and EQ, and that is it. A little bit of reverb on the vocals, and that's literally it. And then, mastering obviously helps a lot, and we do pay someone to do that because
yes,
it's beyond our realm. And you know, we need someone to come clean up the mess I've made with the mix or whatever.
What are some of the have you had feedback from some of the mastering, you know, people that you've used for mastering along the way that they've been like, hey man,
we mainly have used one person too. Usually we've had a couple, but Jared from Orphan Donor and out of the Philly area, really cool person, insanely good drummer. And we found him through Sten and I have a shared interest in Jesus Peace, and they had one of their EPs was produced by him, and so we liked how that sounded. So we just kind of cold after we had the first EP recorded and pre-mixed, we sent that to him, and yeah, he did that and the second EP and God's Country and Tin Killer also, right? He did that as well.
And he's never once complained to me about how bad. He did email me a tip not too long ago about how to help cut down on the sibilance a little bit in the vocals, because there are a lot of sharp S's. And I was like, yeah, thank you, I need help with that.
Oh, but yeah, we've mainly just worked with him.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, so not as much, he hasn't given you as much criticism or feedback that, you've... Like, hey, you gunk this up, you should do this next time, or this is...
He's shit. Always been very nice. He's just always just like, this fucking rocks. Like, it's always very complimentary, and I'm like, that makes me feel good.
Every time I turn something into him, I feel like it's like at work when you turn in like a project or something, and like, you're like, well, this is going to get torn apart. You know? But no, it doesn't. He's always very stoked on it, you know?
Interesting. You mentioned... Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead, finish for whatever you
have. Oh, no, that's it.
Okay. You mentioned art project in a couple minutes ago as referring to the band and stuff like that. What is the overall goal for as an art project? Because I want to get into some of like the aesthetic stuff that we've kind of brought up a little bit. So what is the overall goal? And, you know, do you still see it as an art project, or is it more like a band now?
I definitely see it as like an art project for sure. And like for me, and I know, you know, for Raygun to some extent too, because we talk about that sort of stuff in depth, is like, you know, we definitely want to capture the vibe, the kind of like darkness of the American Southern Plains and Midwest in a way that maybe other bands have not been able to do that before. We try to be kind of unique in our voice to that extent, and we also try to tie in sort of the other, you know, like the album art and t-shirts we make and the videos, all that stuff, we try to be kind of like in the realm of that sort of concept, you know. And even when we bring other people on board to help us out with either art or, you know, videos, things like that, we try to talk to people who understand that vision, you know, to a certain extent. But I would say that's kind of the abridged explanation of kind of what we're trying to achieve with that, you know.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. When we first, like I said, when we first started the band, it was just to have fun and stuff. And just, I hadn't been creative in a while, and I guess didn't have either, and it kind of just has snowballed into more and more. So, you know, I like it. I know that we've all talked about, like, since this has gotten bigger and it's looking like we're gonna be like, this is something we can do full time, I know we want to do like other stuff as well, like try other things and not just, you know, necessarily put out just like Chatpile album one, Chatpile album two. Like, we're writing a second album right now, but I know we want to, like, you know, if we have more free time and we're not working day jobs, why not make some weird noise stuff or try our hands at some other stuff? I know, not to give away all our secrets, but we've been talking about, you know, maybe fucking around with some other, like, non-Chatpile-y stuff at all, you know, kind of psyche stuff maybe, or switching instruments, doing, you know,
separate
trying different
altogether,
stuff.
Separate project.
Yeah, but with the same members, right, you know, just, right. And like, and we can, you know, just different things, because that's always been the biggest inhibitor for me, is just like having, you know, we've all had like day jobs and stuff, and it's not, you know, if I just had some, you know, money and didn't have to work all the time, it would be a lot easier to make art all day and try different things. And so thankfully now it's looking like we're getting into a position to where it's gonna be like more stable income for us to be able to do this. And so yeah, I hope it can be more, you know, broader, just art stuff as well, and not just, you know, the one thing. I don't know.
Time is definitely our biggest enemy. Like, we're not the most prolific band at all, but it's because we just have too much going on in our real lives to dedicate what we have. I feel like all the ideas and the creativity is there. But just the physical ability to get together and like execute the ideas is not. So hopefully if we can get to a position where that is the case, then we could kind of expand sort of the idea of what Chatpile is about and show different sides of the band, you know, which I feel like we've done a little bit already with, like, you know, with the 10 Killer soundtrack, and then kind of the more like mellow songs that are on the split that we're putting out with Nerver. But I think there's a lot more in us and a lot of different ideas to explore that we just haven't had the time to get to.
Is scoring films and doing that kind of work something you're going to continue in the future, or did you just have that opportunity at the one time with the 10 Killer?
Just that one for now, but we would definitely do it again if someone reached out to us.
Anytime this comes up, I'll say it again. If any real filmmakers that make movies that people see want us to score their thing, please, yeah, absolutely. Extremely interested. That would be awesome.
Cool.
I had a blast doing that. It was definitely way different than how I've ever tried to write stuff before. And it was awesome, and I would love to do more of it. So
yeah. And not before we get too far ahead of ourselves, where did you come up with the aesthetic and the art, the direction for like the album cover and like the EP covers? And it just, you seem to have like a one color kind of, you go with one color and then you kind of just stick with it for the entire, like, you know, time frame with that project or with that piece of work.
So the inspiration, because I'm the one who does the layouts for that stuff and takes the pictures and stuff. As far as like the photo part of it, you know, the inspiration just kind of comes, like I said earlier, about just that very particular type of like ugly Americana.
Yeah, every piece of art, cover art that we've used, has been within a 3-4 mile radius of where all of us live and where we practice and stuff. It's all just,
not even be too far.
It's just a couple. It's just that part of the city. It's just all the stuff around where everyone we know is. And yeah, that's the cover of God's Country is the county jail.
Yeah.
and the power transformer there. That's just on Klassen, which is one of the main roads in OKC.
That was very deliberate for that album in particular, because we, you know, the album's pretty political, and we kind of wanted to embrace that by including a picture of the jail on our album cover, because it is one of the most notoriously terrible jails in all of America, where, you know, dozens of people, inmates die every single year. It's falling apart. And their solution, by the way, was just to build a bigger, newer jail down the street. So
yeah, that's happening. So congrats to us for, yeah, a new monolith. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it definitely, the other ones too, it's just kind of whenever we, it's like, you know it when you see it. Like, there's just, sometimes it'll be like an area we see in town, and we'll just be like, maybe we should go there and take some pictures there or something. There's just that something about it when you're just seeing like an oil derrick next to like, you know, a strip mall next to a, you know, Jack in the Box. It's just like, this is what we're talking about. Yeah. This is, I don't know, this is where we're from.
It's Middle
this,
Americana, it's just, yeah.
It's just the reality of like true Americana. It's like not, it's not dudes playing wash tubs, you know, Mumford and Son regalia or whatever. It's like, yeah, it's like, it's endless strip malls that are crumbling and infrastructure that's falling apart and that kind of thing, you know, and that's really what we're trying to capture with that stuff. On the layout side, you know, it kind of goes back to like some of my more like art rock leanings of stuff that I like. I'll just fully admit to like more or less kind of ripping off the layout of there's a band. They only had one EP in the 80s called Uzi, and it's featured Thalia Zadik from Live Skull and Come, and the EP is called Sleep Asylum. It came out on Homestead Records, and it's just, I think it's like an Egon Schiele painting or something like that, but it's a painting in a rectangular formation with tons of blank space around it, and then their logo at the top. And it's like perfect, perfectly balanced, beautiful. I'm just like, well, why can't a heavy band do the same thing?
Yeah. I mean, it sticks out and it's great. I mean, I like the direction of it. And, you know, it's, the logo fits nicely up there. I'm looking at the cover now, but the logo fits nicely up there with the, you know, little bit more burnt orange, whatever color you want to call that,
brown, bronze or something,
whatever.
We definitely did the, it was a choice as well. I mean, it was, I don't want to say a joke, but when we were first starting the band too, when we were trying to think of like, oh, we need like a logo or something, I was just like, what if, you know, definitely Sten and I were like, we should definitely do a blob, like some sort of stupid ass like death metal, black metal,
yeah,
blob, because even though we're not playing that music, I don't know, we like logos like that, and even if we're not playing music like that, it just, we just thought it looked fucking cool, and especially mixed with the type of like framing and art that we do, it just makes it kind of, I don't know, I think it stands out. I think it makes people curious as to what it's going to sound like at all.
And that was very deliberate too, is like, we wanted like, I know we're not like a traditional extreme metal band, but like we have extreme elements, and there's definitely like tonally that exists, you know, so I don't think it's like stolen valor to have like a but I do like the idea of mixing it up enough to where like if you look at it and you see these elements juxtaposed together, I want it to be a little confusing, like so that maybe your curiosity is sparked by like what the fuck is this, you know.
What are the next colors coming up for the next, you know?
We're not there yet.
Not far. In fact, I stress all the time about like, what the hell am I going to take a picture of?
Well, you know, for you, you can just go outside, like you guys said, and since you have all that, and then you know the radius, you can just go and snap something.
Yeah, we'll find some other bleak thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
You kind of
usually the colors come from just whatever the
is in the photo.
Yeah, because you just kind of want to complement the photo that way. So that will determine the color scheme.
Interesting. Well, we all look forward to that. Obviously, the next in the project's visual aspect of it. You brought up the lyrics being very political, and I was going to touch on this earlier, but Luther had mentioned that, you know, Reagan is creating stories and characters and stuff like that in the lyrics. So, but as you know, you brought up, they are kind of political. As one of those songs is like, why? Obviously, you can. It's pretty big. I'm assuming it's about homelessness and people sleeping outside, because that's an ongoing theme throughout that entire song. But yeah,
that would be a non character song. That's more just you know,
yeah, so
very straight up and yeah,
is it as observational
right,
gets.
Right. No, and is it half and half when it comes to the you know lyrics, or is that something you guys you know can touch on? Or I know since Reagan's not here, obviously, but yeah. Is it half and half, or is it just like whatever happens for that particular song happens?
It's kind of the latter. Like Ray Gunn writes, it's all him, but he like basically we write and record basically an entire song before we give it to him, and then he kind of does his thing, and you just kind of never know what
it's going to be about. Or yeah,
there have been times like you know like he will sometimes like when we're hanging out being like, oh, you know, I've been thinking about maybe writing a song about this like crazy thing or that, and then he'll forget about it and we have to be like, hey, remember that thing you were talking about? You should like do that this time, you know. There's a song on the album called Tropical Beaches Incorporated that was like that, where we kind of presented the song to him and he's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. And I was like, well, you kept talking about
Don LaPree.
Yeah. Like his crazy story, like why this would be like a perfect song to do that on. And like he did, he just sat there, wrote up his lyrics, and then we recorded him. It was awesome.
That's pretty cool. How did you guys get linked up with the Flesner? Is that, am I pronouncing it right? The Flinzer.
Yeah. That was, I'm pretty sure a couple of the members of the band Elizabeth Color Wheel had shown Jonathan, who runs the label, our band, and Elizabeth Color Wheel is an awesome, I'd say, experimental metal band, rock band. They're very interesting, very cool band. But they just showed Jonathan our stuff, and they just cold, you know, contacted us directly. We never really, you know, contacted or tried to solicit ever to get any attention, because again, you know, said it a few times, but we never really intended to do anything with this. Just it was just supposed to be for fun. So like it was very surprising when, you know, a real label was talking to us and stuff. And
living in Oklahoma City, like it's really hard to impress how like the idea of being like signed or something doesn't even seem like a reality. You just kind of like, well, we're just gonna do this shit for ourselves, and you know, maybe our friends will hear it or whatever. But yeah, so when actually what's funny is the Flinzer, they kind of like were doing a little bit of flirtation online with the band accounts on social media and stuff. I was like, hey, this label's like kind of paying attention to us. And then yeah, they finally reached out and kind of got the conversation going. But we were like, we don't even know what we're doing with this. Like, what are the expectations of like being on a label and stuff?
Yeah, because we had to make it clear that we at that time, not interested in touring a ton, not interested in putting out a ton of music, not interested in doing really a lot of anything. That was kind of, we were just like, you know, if we are down if we're able to always do everything at our own pace, and, you know, and they seem to be very down for that. And
well, and they're like the perfect label for that too, because, you know, it's like, it's super eclectic. So like, it's easy to not fit into a perfect box and like, and hang out in the sort of pantheon of like the Flinzer artist, you know, but then a lot of the bands that he deals with are like bedroom projects or like one man band type things, or like bands that are real bands, but they're super mysterious and never play live, or like all that kind of stuff. So he's definitely used to dealing with projects that aren't like complete road dog full-time you know, touring bands or whatever.
All that's changing for you guys though. You guys had a
you
guys dropped that debut album, got all these accolades and all this hubbub about you. So, you know, I mean, I think you guys are playing overseas before you play my area, which is Southeast Florida, or Southeast in Florida. So, you know, I know some people here, because I heard about you guys through another band that's kind of local to here. They all moved to Savannah, Georgia, but the Holy Ghost Tabernacle Choir.
Nat
and all of them. They posted some of your stuff, and I became a big fan of theirs because they popped up a couple years ago locally here.
Their band is sick.
Yeah, like, it's pretty sick.
Very cool.
And that's one of the cooler things about. You guys may not know, but I did this podcast for Lambgoat for a number of years, and then I recently took over everything. So when we did that, you know, we started also opening up like our reporting to certain other bands that Alex didn't really cover or didn't have time to cover for the most part. Like, he didn't know who was what and this is that. But so there's been times where, like, you know, I've added new bands to the reporting list, and Chatpile and the Holy Ghost are two of those bands that we've added to that. So, you know,
hell yeah.
It's probably us a little bit helping you guys out along the way with all those accolades coming. And so we'll take some credit for that. But
we appreciate it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was only I can't say that I've been from day one. It was I think God's Country Singles is when I started grabbing on. I think Slaughterhouse or whatever the first one was.
Slaughterhouse was the first one.
Yeah, right? I think that's the first one they posted, and I was like, what the fuck is this? And then...
it was a weird choice for a single, too, which I'm glad people liked that one, because it's one of our more complicated songs to play.
I think
it
was the video. I think the video was just, like, weird and fucked up.
It's
and
super
I was like,
weird, yeah.
What the fuck is this? Yeah, so...
Well, that's what we aim for. Like I said, you know, it's like all this, you know, where we really try not to fit into any neat, tidy boxes as far as like our sound or our scene or anything like that. I mean, it seems to be working in our favor, but you know, it can also be challenging when people just don't know what to do with you, you know.
So that was
something early on, just that we couldn't really, it was hard to book stuff because it didn't seem like we really fit on anywhere. Most bills, but yeah.
I guess now you kind of fit in anywhere for the most part.
That's kind of what's happened, is it's sort of like people sort of like claim us as their own, which like I'll take it, you know. Like I love that, you know, they're like hardcore kids who love us, and I feel like we would so get our asses kicked in like that type of scene, you know. I'm like, cool, I'm glad people like us there.
Yeah.
And there's kind of like the artier sort of metal world that seems to like us. There's the kind of old head noise rock guys who like us, and it's like, it's cool. Like I love that all these different things that we love ourselves like must be coming through in the music that we're making, because all these different groups are finding like that part of the band and latching onto it.
You know, it is interesting. And like I was trying to tie it back in with what I was saying before we got off topic there with the Holy Ghost and everybody. But you guys are going to start playing, you guys, I guess, plan on playing a lot more. You're playing festivals and stuff like that over abroad and everything. Do you guys plan on just doing like festival run type stuff? Or do you guys want to do like, you know, headlining or support tours or anything like that? I mean, I don't know why I went directly to headlining tours, but.
I think we're open to, here's the thing, is like the sort of momentum of the band is faster than the commitments that we take on, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like, let's say yes to a festival and then 4 months go by and.
It's people, like, man, we should have maybe booked some other stuff around that or something.
It's bad because it's like, oh, wait, all these people want us to play, or like, hey, these offers are getting bigger and bigger and that kind of thing. And we're trying to definitely take it all with some humility and reasonability that things are going to cool off and all that. But that said, we would also like to, hey, we're having this kind of like moment that like most bands probably really wish they could have. Let's take advantage of it and not fuck it up. And I think part of that reasoning is that we need to play out more.
We need a tour. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we're doing the stuff that's announced right now is, yeah, we're playing in Roadburn, which will have happened by the time this comes out. We're leaving on Saturday for that, which it's and then playing some. Yeah, just a couple one-off or two shows in Oklahoma City in May, and then we're doing Denmark Roskilde Festival, playing Oblivion Access, that's in June. So it's like a couple things here and there. Then, yeah, go into the UK in August, and that's kind of like a shorter, that's like our first kind of like tour of that part of the year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that'll be that. And then the idea would be to try and book some sort of, you know, full US thing either in the back half of the year, you know, around that.
Yeah, because
that, yeah.
Go ahead, finish up.
Well, yeah, if we're going to try and potentially have this, you know, be, if I'm not trying to have a day job, we're going to have to tour. I mean, it's just that's how you
allegedly
do it. That's
allegedly.
Yeah.
We're all trying to chase that. We're all trying to chase that not having a day job. Same here.
Yeah, so we'll see. But it's just, you know, that's just how it is. You just, anyone that has played any music knows that, like, yeah, it's through touring and merch like that. That's just how you're going to be able to have that income. And so regardless of how much it is, we'll probably just need to start doing more touring.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. We're dropping the split review tonight.
Oh, cool.
And it's already been out for a month and a half, probably by the time you've heard this. So it already has an 8. So there's that.
Oh, cool.
You're getting that firsthand, but it's already been out for 6 weeks or so. So, yeah, I got an 8. Why would I bring that up? What the fuck did I bring that up for?
We're playing with them with Nerver for doing a little next month
split release. Posted that too. But sorry. Yeah, Elliot, the reviewer of that, is also a fellow Floridian. And when I asked everybody in our Discord, the writer's Discord or whatever, I was like, hey, who's got questions for Chatpile? Elliot was like, when are they playing Florida? And I was like, I don't think they've ever played here. And I said, they definitely don't have anything lined up to play here. But I was thinking, I was like, I know they're going abroad a couple times. And it's like, yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah, we also haven't played California, so anyone in Florida, don't feel bad. Like, it is, I liked a tweet from our own band that's been tweeted out the other day that, like, I can't, it's very funny that we're going to Europe before we're going to fucking California.
It's the weird shit that happens with this band, though. It's like, there was never like a plan, so we're kind of just catching up all the time. Like, a story from the Grammys.com, an interview I did with them published before I got on this podcast. It's like, never, if you would have asked me in 2019 when we were writing our little shitty noise rock songs if the Grammys would be talking to us, you know, I would certainly not have guessed that, let alone that we're going to be in Europe in a week and all this like crazy stuff. So like, you're definitely seeing a band scrambling and like keep like a career together on the fly, you know?
Yeah. Well, do you guys work with people? I mean, obviously you're signed to the label, but do they have is it more of like an internal thing, or do you have help externally with people helping you with those types of,
It's really just like, basically I do.
We have an agent, but Sten's our manager basically. Okay. Yeah.
So we have like a booking agent now, and then the label has a publicist.
PR, through the label.
But otherwise, I do basically all the management type stuff, and work closely with Jonathan with the Flenser. Like, if I ever need help with anything, he's a good source of information. But otherwise, we're just kind of trying to figure it out on our own. The idea of like management and stuff has come up, but we're just like really hesitant about it because I don't know, we just don't want a bunch of cooks in the kitchen. There's financial things to think about, you know. Yeah, music industry too is like, it's like, as a music nerd, I know how lecherous and evil the many facets of the music industry are. It's like, I feel like the more we can shield ourselves from people trying to get a hand in what we're doing, the probably safer we are, you know.
I was gonna say, do it as long as you can for as long as you can. Do it.
Yes.
Do it yourself for as long as you can.
Yeah, because I have no delusion that we're gonna, you know. Sten even said it a little bit ago. Like, you know, we know how fickle this stuff can be, and you know, even if we're hot for a little bit, you know, we could be forgotten in 2 years. You know, so it's like, that's why I'm kind of just like, you know, if people are really digging us right now and want to see us, it just makes sense for us to go, you know, kind of play out and see what happens. And, you know, if we can turn that into something, that's really awesome. So, yeah. So far it's been very positive. The tours that we've done, we just got back with from touring with Lingua Ignota, and that was really awesome. And
super positive experience
that definitely energized us, that experience. Yeah,
we're like, okay, the people clearly want to see us. You know, like the Lingua and the very small crew that she had were like amazing people. It's just like the whole experience was super positive, and so we were just kind of like, okay, maybe we can live like this.
Yeah,
this is like a reality that we can do.
We can,
you know,
all get along in a van for many, many weeks.
Yeah. Well, you know, the cool thing is that because we're all like old friends, that part of it's like the easiest part.
Yeah.
Just like hanging out. We have like a, you know, we only played 6 shows, but we were on the road for 2 whole weeks with, you know, spending the same night in the hotel room together, you know, all that. And like, we were having fun all the way up until the very end, you know? So I don't worry about that part of it.
It's more just the dealing with van shit and just like the logistics of everything. And,
then poverty.
Yeah.
Yes, poverty for sure.
Yeah.
long rides and poverty, long drives and poverty.
Yeah.
You guys kind of dabbled on it earlier. So is there, you like you said, you're trying to strike with the iron's hot. So you clearly have kind of been working on album number two. Does that, do you have like an idea or a timeline when any of this comes out? Because obviously you have like dates already, like festival dates, and you're thinking about tours at the end of the year. So, but you haven't even really technically supported God's Country in full yet at all.
This would technically be like a year later God's Country tour.
Yeah.
And as far as like the second LP goes, like it's very much in its infancy right now. So like trying to say like when it's going to come out, like we have our own personal goals, but like, man, if the posts are going to change so much.
Because, I would just say if you're a Chat Pile fan and you look at our calendar, if there's any time in which we are not touring, we're probably working on writing the second album. That's pretty much what we're going to be doing in our anytime that we're not, you know, getting either the couple weeks before we leave or we need to start rehearsing again, you know, like that's usually just how we do it. We just, you know, we write and then until it's time to rehearse. And I know we're probably going to start doing, you know, adding more days a week of working on stuff and just trying to get through it. But I imagine, you know, just throughout the summer, we're going to keep working on it. We already have like, you know, I'm not going to say, yeah, we already have a few like instrumentals for multiple songs that I'm really excited about. I think some really cool stuff we're working on. And, but yeah, it's just, you know, it's just throughout the rest of the year. I'd hope for, we'll really be able to grind it in the winter time this year. I think that's probably makes the most sense for when we're gonna have the most time to like actually dedicate to just doing that. But we'll see. I mean, next year, we'll see, you know, but it's happening. We're, you know, we have just been, you know,
it will take the Flenser really cracking the whip on needing a new album probably before
we're like, I got you. So you're dragging your feet. I got you. Loud and clear. We heard you loud and clear. All right.
Well, okay. To go back to what I was saying earlier, time is always our enemy. So we'll just see.
Yeah, if we get more time to work on stuff, then it makes it way easier to grind it. Because I mean, the way that we did all of God's Country was basically one or two nights a week for months. Like we just got together a couple nights a week to try and work on one song until it was done, and then move on to the next one. And that's just, it took a while to do. And you know, it's not a very efficient way to record, but it is just how we record, so that is how it's going to be.
It's so. It's middle America. Everything's slower in the middle.
Yeah, right? Exactly. You
just say that. well, we'll end on this. What are the overall, like, what's, and again, we've kind of touched a little bit on it, but as you continue to play shows, grow, release more music, what is the overall goal for the band itself, not the art project part of it, but just the band?
I don't know. I mean, we just kind of had a conversation about this the other day. We were talking about like what our goals should be going forward and stuff. And
is it a Grammy? You already got the interview.
No, it's more just, we're already hitting all the stuff that would have been goals for me. Like my goals would have been to go play music, you know, overseas, or you know, even for me, I'd never in any band put out a vinyl record, and so that was always a huge thing for me. And so we did that with, you know, the EPs first, and then like, well, the LP, that was like, okay, that is an album, the first album I've ever put out, really. So that was like a big milestone. And so now where we're at right now, it's just like, it's hard for me to even, it's like, man, everything's been happening. It's just like, I guess having it be some sort of sustainable, you know, allow me to not work a nightmare day job that I hate anymore, that would be awesome. I mean, if it doesn't happen though, that's fine too, you know. I can, it's just,
well, because for me, like on that, like I'm always at a weird crossroads in that, like it would be amazing if we could turn this into some type of sustainable like career, but at the same time the output that we do comes first in my opinion. And I find that a lot of bands, when they get into kind of a steady situation where a band is like their main income, they get really tied up in this like album cycle tour cycle thing, and then all of a sudden you start getting these like shitty albums from these legacy bands that have been around way too long. And to me, you know, I don't ever want to find myself in that position, and I will sacrifice like maybe being able to make a living to make sure that that type of thing doesn't happen, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but I just like, it's, I don't want to be the type of band that puts out a record every 2 years and it's the same crap over and over and over and it's bad, you know. It's like, I really like, it's important to me that the artistic vision of whatever we're doing is like at the forefront of the project, you know. And then if we can pay our bills or whatever, that's amazing.
Yeah. What, so like you kind of were talking about be a band that, you know, puts out subpar stuff, and one of the bands that I was thinking that you might want to tour with might be like a band that's similar to that, kind of an in and out of its own, you know, in and out of its own way in its career. But Korn, you know, Korn has,
I mean, I would gladly,
obviously you would gladly, yeah, tour with them, but they've also released a couple duds over the years, you know.
Oh yeah, but you know, I think they're kind of finding like their footing again, like and the last couple of albums, like, you know, look, I'm a huge fan and I could talk about Korn all day long. A band like that's a little bit different to me because they are so huge, it almost doesn't count anymore, like
Metallica
or something like that. It's like, at this point you are just like a corporate entity, like you're a tax code with like like hands out W-9s and stuff like that, like to a massive industry.
Yeah, the Korn industrial complex, yeah, is totally. Just like, yeah. Yeah.
So you have to kind of take that stuff with like a grain of salt, you know. I kind of think of it more in terms of like bands that are kind of in the middle gray area that obviously sustain themselves but maybe have outworn their welcome or whatever, you know. But yeah, dude, if Korn asks us to tour, you better believe we'll
yeah, they do
have, our management, if you're listening to this,
they've definitely brought on a couple, like the 68, the band with Josh Scoggin,
yeah,
from,
yeah,
Chariot and Norma Jean, they've toured.
Did Code Orange go with them?
Yeah, they definitely did Slipknot, so you know,
yeah.
So is that kind of where, like, where do you think your audience lays? Is it within that new metal loving crowd, or is it within the metal crowd?
I don't think so. We're too weird for them.
That would be a for us thing. That would definitely be a, I feel like,
you don't think
everyone in the crowd would hate our guts and we would just be,
oh,
happy.
No.
To be,
yeah,
hanging.
What I should clarify is like your audience, not like the audience, not strike it from like a tour show conversation. Like the people who attend like Ozfest, or so to speak, are those more people that are in your audience, or is it the different kind of metal fan that isn't going to like all the metal shows per se, but they like sludge or grunge, kind of, like, you know?
I think it's more in that world, because like I'm sure there are people like that are kind of more like mainstream metal fans that would appreciate what we do, and like we're kind of learning that they are out there, which is like blows my mind, because I think of our band as being very weird,
inaccessible, yeah,
stuff, but they exist. But I do think like the core audience for our type of music are going to be more people who are a little more adventurous, you know, like for instance, us touring with Lingua Ignota makes perfect sense, because to me that's like a very like crossover sort of art, you know, an audience that's very open-minded to eclectic styles of,
yeah,
heaviness.
Do you see yourself playing more post-metal shows, or because again, I don't know, because I think you could like moonlight in these different realms. Like, I think a lot of new metal fans may like you. I think you might be, yeah, pigeonholing yourselves because you want to have those cool shows, like, you know, the tour you just went on and stuff. Those are cool for like the gatekeeper people that you're talking to. But I think you could sneak around.
Well, no, it's not. Look, if
there's enough people to fill 1,000 cap venue for Chat Pile out there, I'm taking all comers.
No, like, I'm definitely not too cool to play arenas or whatever, or like play to like an audience that like their favorite bands are like Mudvayne and Chevelle or whatever. Like, anyone is invited to the party, and I think that rocks. I think realistically trying to sustain or like set your like our sights on something like that just doesn't make sense. I just think that we're too weird. And like on the other side of things, I don't necessarily want to pigeonhole ourselves with the whole post-metal thing either, because like, again, it's like I think we have like a noise rock fan base that is definitely out there, you know. There's hardcore kids seem to like what we're doing, even though we're not very hardcore. It's like, I don't know how to bridge all those gaps and get all those people to play.
Mixed bills. Whenever we do shows locally, we always just try and do, you know, I love mixed bills, basically. Yeah. So I would love to continue doing that, especially if we do like a headlining tour. I would love to bring a assortment of bands that aren't necessarily just, you know, noise rock and stuff. Like, you know, we have a lot of tastes. I want to see stuff that, you know, that I'd love to see every night. And we've definitely, what we've been brainstorming about, like different bands to reach out to about who to tour with and stuff. And I definitely, that is something that I think of as well. It's not just like, you know, the chat pile show. Like if we are asking someone to come with us, I want it to be like, you know, I want it to make sense, like as for the audience, and give them something that is cool, you know, yeah. And have that be a cool collection of music. And so with like the Lingua Ignata thing, I thought that like it made sense to, for us to go play with her, because that
it makes,
you know,
sense. No one's saying that, yeah, doesn't make sense, but
yeah, no,
you can also, but
I just thought it's cool, yeah,
fucking like Reveille, yeah, or whoever else, new, yeah, metal band, yeah.
I mean, I think the answer is like we just have to kind of like jump, hop around. We have to hop around to, yeah, like
I want to, I do want to do different stuff. I want to hop around and like just, you know, if we have fans out there that are, you know, in other places, I'd like to bring it to them, you know, yeah. Like that's definitely something I want to do, because I mean, I didn't get into music through in a cool way, you know, like I'm 33, I got into music through nu metal and through like or, you know, through pop punk and stuff, yeah, and just, yeah, stuff that, you know, genres that people make fun of and shit. And so I, you know,
yeah, I mean, we're from small town Oklahoma, and I'm old enough for it to be pre-internet, so it's like I'm definitely like, yeah, dude, I got to like weird crazy music through, you know, Pantera and Korn and Nirvana, mm, that kind of stuff, and then found my way backwards, you know. Yeah, it wasn't, yeah, the other way.
That's how we all did it. I want one more thing, and then I'll cut you loose because we're getting toward that time. But you guys are very prevalent on Twitter about Oklahoma drivers, and being from Florida, I could probably, yeah, say that we could go head-to-head on, yeah, that. Yeah. So what is it with the what is it with the Twitter and just the showcasing the accidents with the Oklahoma, okay, drivers?
Well, I do think that we have particularly bad drivers because Oklahoma. So people may not know this about Oklahoma City, but we're the 25th. Largest city in terms of population, but we're like the third largest city in America in terms of land mass.
You want to know who the first one is?
Dude.
No, it's Jacksonville.
There you go.
Boom. Okay, perfect.
Yeah,
we're on the list.
I watch Jeopardy.
There you go.
So, because of that, driving culture is like, it like pedestrian, like if you try to walk or ride your bike around here, it is a death sentence.
Yeah, no way.
It's horrifying. But then on top of that, because of the driving culture, we're also a drinking culture. So people are just driving around drunk, picking up their phones, driving in the houses constantly. Yeah. But here's another thing is that I don't, to be totally fair, I don't think this is like a purely an Oklahoma phenomenon. I think what it is an Oklahoma media phenomenon. So they love to cover that shit. And I love to jump on it and like repost it whenever I see it. Another one I've noticed are they like our local news loves posting cop propaganda about like canines and stuff. It's
I've seen you guys share that, yeah.
Yeah, it did culminate in the other day. There was like some weather, and there was like a car had crashed into like the, like, I don't know, a pole or something right in front of the power station where the cover of God's Country is, and someone got a photo of that just being like, it's too much. It's the simulation is just breaking,
it's
these days.
Meta, yeah, it's meta beyond meta. Well, boys, it was great having you on. I appreciate your time. Oh, well, I mean, God, one more thing.
Yeah,
one
no worries.
One more thing. Just because I was going to bring it up earlier, and you may not answer it. You may answer it. Who knows? But clearly, you don't have to tell everybody your real names. But what's with the using of the names in the band?
Oh, yeah.
So that was Ray Gunn's idea from the beginning, and he wanted to do like a Dead Kennedys style like punk thing. So
he's like, I can't let all my other fans from all my other music realize I'm doing this dog shit band with you guys making all this noise.
There might have been some self-preservation involved, but
for me, a little bit. I mean, it was more just it was just kind of like when Ray suggested it, he was basically like, "We should have fake punk names, and mine is Ray Gunn Bush." Like, he just already had it locked and loaded, and mine is from like a there's a comedy guy, Longmont Potion Castle, that some people may know, but he does weird, like, surreal prank calls and stuff, and a character name that he used one time was Luther Manhole, and so I just, like, took that, and then, yeah, it was just, I don't know, when it was suggested to do, it made me think of Dead Kennedys, you know, just, like, you know, East Bay Ray and Jello Biafra and stuff like that, just, something fun to do. Again, never really thought anyone would listen to us or care, so I've joked around before that I am now like, it's weird that I've locked myself into Luther Manhole as a person I have to be sometimes.
We can evolve it over time. You can be like Lou, or I want to call you Drop G.
Yeah.
They're definitely like, because it was one of those things where, like, we posted about you guys, and I think the press release had, like, your original name in it, and then we got an email like a couple hours later, like, "Hey, can you change it to Sten? They go by Sten." And I was like, "Okay, I guess."
My name has been thrown out there so many times that I'm like the least precious about it, you know. But
now I just want people to use the stage names just for consistency's sake. I think it's just more if you know if they we just use this everywhere, it's just, you know, it's confusing if people, you know, going by a whole bunch of different names.
I mean, like, it's confusing if you have an online persona name and a real name in real life, and people have to disseminate which one to use. Yeah,
it's almost like we didn't think it out at all, and this has just happened.
Yeah, I deal with it all the time. People are like, call me three names. I have my main name, David, and then which most of my family calls me or whatever, and then people then have the problem between, do I call him Dave or David? And then I'll answer either. And then you add on this whole persona of Lurk, and it's like people who meet me recently have no problem calling me Lurk. If I meet you and I'm Lurk, it's everybody that has either called me Dave or David who or whatever. They have a problem with saying Lurk first, and so they'll say like Pete from Remembering Never, and Ether Coven. Whenever we talk, he refers to me by all three names. He just calls me like Lurk, David, David. And it's just like, whatever, dude.
That's the weird thing that's been happening in our world, too, is like now, like people, like friends that I've had for, you know, decades calling me Stan. And
yeah,
like,
call me Luther now.
It just
like,
is weird.
They get a kick out of it. Getting a kick out of it. And so it is kind of like, you know, giving us a little shit, I think. But it's also just, I don't know, fuck it. It's whatever. Yeah. It's fine. But yeah, I have that a little bit too. My you know, behind the curtain, my first name is Griffin. And so people call me Griff a lot, or Griffin, or I, you know, I'm right there with you. Yeah, people,
it's a juggle.
Lots of different stuff. So yeah.
Well, awesome, boys. We had a great time with you here, and hopefully, you know, in the next year, I can get to see you guys play down here, because so packed, and you're gallivanting around the world before you even play like the coastlines, but you know, to each his own, I guess, however your trajectory takes you.
Well, we would love to head down there sometime, so, but thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Yeah, just keep putting it out, and we'll keep posting it. So again, it was a great time, and I'll send you guys the review, I guess, or whatever, and you can share that, and in 5 to 6 weeks, whatever, we'll share this.
Awesome.
All right. Have a good one, boys.
See ya.
Peace.
Bye.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.